You're listening to DottoTech, helping you get the most out of your technology wherever you use it, at home, at school, or at work. Brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. 20 years, the trusted voice of technology in Canada, Steve Dotto.
Hello and welcome to DottoTech. I am Steve Dotto and we are glad you're joining us today. By we, I mean myself and Art Factora. Art, how are you doing, sir?
I am very excited. I got an Eventbrite invitation days ago.
Yes.
There is a rumor out there about a wing night with a bunch
beer
of with a bunch of tech people.
Yes. We're going to have next App Wednesday, which is the 17th of this month. We've decided that we are going to have a DottoTech meetup, kind of get everybody together. We're going to use App Wednesday as a basis. So 7 o'clock on Wednesday night at the Hudson's Landing Pub. Do you know where that is?
Yes, that is right underneath the Oak Street Bridge, right next to the White Spot.
Yes, yeah, right down there. Yeah, it's in that little hotel. Lots of good parking, easy to get to, close to public transit if you happen to want to have an extra beer or two, or deep-fried dill pickles. They have great deep-fried dill pickles at this, which is one of the reasons I chose this location.
I'm in.
Which is a fine culinary treat, the deep fried dill pickle. I touched base with John Beeler, with Rebecca Bullwood, with Dave Hathaway. I said, hey, you guys, we're gonna App Wednesday after the show live. Do you feel like meeting your fans? Can I call them? I'm not sure, but meeting our peeps. So
or at least the lovely staff at the Hudson's Pub.
Yeah, the Hudson's Landing. So that's what we're gonna be doing. So if you want to come, we do want to know numbers. So we want people to register. So come to the website, DottoTech.com, and click there on the event. It's and then register and come on down. And we it should be fun. We're going to have some prizes. We're going to have some nice door prizes. And I'm working on getting better prizes, because so far the prizes are good. They're not great yet. But if anybody's got a great prize, maybe we'll just
have... You're soliciting now. We should have like a bachelor auction, huh?
You want to do some comedy? It's going to be all men.
I know. Well, that's what I'm saying.
It's going to be all men.
But think of all the women in my life who are single always complain that there's no good men.
This is where to find the good men.
There you go.
It's all of the geeks.
And they've all got jobs.
Most of them have. Well, I'm hoping.
An expendable income.
I've had some interesting experience with people who watch my show in the TV show days. We had some very interesting experiences with guys.
Guaranteed.
With people, and it was seldom with beautiful young women. It was. Not that I'm complaining. I appreciate each and everybody that follows me.
Agreed.
That's true. We got a great show lined up today. We have Dave Olson from Hootsuite is going to be joining us. We also have long time. It's been too long. Michael Kozlowski is going to be joining us.
Our e-book guy.
Michael will be joining us. And we also have Julian from London Drugs. He's going to be talking to us about his essential tips or his essential must-have accessories for tablets and phones. So probably a lot of cases, but Julian usually comes up with something pretty good. So I'm looking forward to that. And as if coming to sign up, and I apologize to all of our listeners who aren't in the Vancouver area that can't make it down to Hudson's Landing. But you still is worth visiting the website, because we are giving away a 1-year subscription to Microsoft Office 365, the home premium edition.
Ooh.
But yes, it is a very nice prize. And that's a prize for the online side. That's nothing to do with the beer and wine night. Beer and wing night. Do you think it's wrong to say beer? I wonder about that. Is it wrong to encourage people to drink beer on the radio?
I don't know if it's wrong, but we should. It's not the focus.
I say right in the invitation that don't drink and drive, because I don't.
And good for you.
I'll be drinking like Diet Coke and wings and dill pickles, deep fried dill pickles. The wings are pretty good there.
Yeah, sorry. Which will get you drunk on a whole different level.
It gets you
not alcoholic.
It
drunk.
Puts me in a happy place.
Drunk on life.
Puts me in a happy and pudgy place. Happy and pudgy. And the nice thing is it's an App Wednesday night, so we'll be able to laud the winners and mock the losers.
I better get on it.
You should, because, and there's no hockey game that night, so and it's trade deadline day. Did you follow trade deadline, just out of curiosity?
Of course I did.
Were you monitoring to see if Luongo got traded?
Of course I did.
And are you disappointed Luongo did not get traded?
I'm not, because I don't think, of everyone who got traded today, I don't think any of those players would have helped the Vancouver Canucks out.
Admittedly, it didn't look like a... Oh, Jason Pominville.
I don't think we would have gotten him, though.
Oh, okay. So, who we could have gotten. I think it's just awkward. I was ready for a change. It's like, It's time to go on. I like Roberto, but it was time to go on. And...
oh, best line of the day. He says, my contract sucks. $65 million.
I'm crying a river. You know what? I'm thinking, yeah, if I had a $65 million 9-year contract, I don't think the first word out of my mouth would be sucks.
No.
About it. Yeah.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. You're listening to Dottotech, brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.
It is always great when we have on Dottotech Dave Olson, Vice President of Community at Hootsuite. How are you doing, Dave?
I'm doing great, Steve. Great to be back on the show.
It is good for us to have you back. And, of course, Hootsuite, just a gem of a technology company in Vancouver. And I asked that if you were busy because I know you guys have gone into new digs. And actually, you're having a big press tour tomorrow. I'm not going to make it tomorrow, but I'm going to make it next week through. But you told me before we got on the air about the growth at Hootsuite. Just tell me, how many people did you have this time last year and how many people do you have now?
This time last year, we were kind of 80, 90 people, and now we're creeping up on 300. And almost all of them are in Vancouver with a few folks in London. We now have a London office. And then a few remote workers that kind of do some specialty work for us in some different U.S. markets. But we're 95% here in Vancouver, and one big happy family here at a new office in Mount Pleasant neighborhood. And so we've moved from our downtown east side first home, and now we've moved kind of taking the big step where we've moved out on our own and we're filling up this office as quick as possible.
That's fast growth, but it's not unusual in the internet space. For the listeners who don't know Hootsuite, Hootsuite is a social media dashboard. It basically allows us to bring all of our social media assets together, our Twitter, our LinkedIn, our Facebook, and manage them all from a unified console, which if you start thinking about all of the different social networks you engage in, it can become a massive amount of time just even just checking your status and your updates in all of your different networks. This allows you to manage them all from one place. And then in their pro version, it allows you to do that on a team basis for your business to have multiple people working on accounts. So it's a very complete toolkit, which just keeps improving, right?
Well, we think so. We take feedback very seriously. And we really look at how our users are pushing it to its outer limits, and we're always trying to adapt for more ways for reporting, more things around safety and security, more ways for team collaboration, and so on.
Now, you do this by extending, obviously, the functionality of the program itself, but you've really been working hard at making it an extensible platform by adding new little apps that you plug in that work with people's different toolkits. Explain to me how that works.
Well, it was, you know, the app directory just celebrated its first birthday about a month ago, which, you know, we kind of joke here at Hootsuite that's kind of like dog years. You know, 1 year is really like 3 to 7 normal years with the amount of activity packed into one time. But what this does is allow third-party developers, whether they're independents or representing another company, to build into our software development kit, an SDK, an API, and all those acronyms, to start passing data back and forth from to our toolkit. And what this means is that more and more of your tasks as a social media manager or brand strategist or whatever you want to call it can be done from within that Hootsuite tab. So one tab on your browser to rule them all. Now you can track all these things like Instagram and Flickr, stay up to date on your email campaigns, do things with SurveyMonkey, and all these things. There's almost 50 apps right now, and it's been a huge success for us. And it's worth noting that just recently we've rolled out a new tier of that, which is paid apps. And most of the apps, to this point are free, but this allows developers to then build in and make a little bit of revenue from adding more features and doing things that are a little bit more of a business focus. Recently, there was a Salesforce app added, new version of the YouTube app, and so on.
Now, do you have any examples of revenue apps that have caught your imagination?
Well, we just launched this 2 weeks ago during South by Southwest. So there's the Salesforce app and the new and a V2 of our YouTube app that really allows a lot more data visualization and analytics and that kind of stuff. And it's a low cost barrier to entry. We're not talking about big expensive software, but allows those 30-party developers to have a little bit of a revenue stream. But for the most part, these tools are baked in there by the companies in order to get access and, you know, kind of combine forces to serve our users better.
Now, for people who use Hootsuite use it for two different basic purposes. One is to communicate out, to use it to unify your messaging going out, and to use it as an interface so that I can say send out tweets, send out LinkedIn updates, that sort of stuff. The other reason that we use it is to monitor all of the different feeds coming in from all of the different sources. So it's a window to the social media world. Is it fair to say most of the apps are from the monitoring perspective, where you actually follow what's happening, or is there a lot of actual publishing that happens through the apps as well?
Now, there's quite a bit of publishing as well, and certainly monitoring is a little bit more of a focus at this point. But with Flickr and YouTube, you can upload your content right there from our apps as well. So it's kind of a mix. And again, we have an extensive user feedback form for each one of the apps, plus what people want to see next. So we respond very, very quickly and specifically to the market on those.
How often do you have to explain to people that you aren't Twitter?
usually I keep a handful of stickers in my pocket, and I just give them a cute owl sticker and then run away.
Because
the question that's a little bit more common is people do think that we're a Twitter-only tool because, you know, that was our first network integration. And it's a huge part of our ecosystem, obviously. We have customers that are monitoring and managing hundreds of Twitter accounts from one Hootsuite account. But really, overall, it's just a part of our entire capabilities now. With Facebook is at least as big as Twitter for us now. LinkedIn, Google Plus Pages, we were the first functioning integration, third-party integration for Google Plus Pages. And, you know, one by one, we add these networks and we build them out. And it's not just the North American-centric networks. We're adding apps and integrations for social networks that aren't Twitter and Facebook, that are big in China or big in Japan or big in Russia.
We're going to circle back to that international story in a minute. But you said something there which intrigues me, because I'm supposed to be a tech guy. You are a tech guy. And you said Google Plus integration. And I'm using the Google Plus integration. And I see where LinkedIn fits in my life. I see where Twitter fits in my life. I see where even Facebook fits in my life. I am still struggling with Google Plus. Just what is it good for?
First of all, I just want to go back to your comment about me being a technology guy. Really, I'm a storyteller that hangs out with technology people. I can't hook up your printer. I don't know how many gigahertz of mega RAMs my computer has. But I hang out with smart people, and a little bit of that rubs off on me.
There you go. Well, but you are a communications guy.
So for Google Plus, it was a little bit surprising to us when it first came out, and of course we'd all seen Buzz and Wave and some of these other Google forays into social media. And when Plus came out, I think there was a little bit of a veil of skepticism, as well as this wave of excitement that comes out from people wondering, what is this new thing that Google is going to do to change our lives? Because obviously Google has caused revolutions in many, many fronts on our internet experience. But at first it was a little bit like, okay, so what does this do that it doesn't do? And really they took the attitude where they released a minimum viable product, and rather than kind of forcing people onto it, they started to gradually add new things that you could do. And what we've realized is a lot of our groups and communities that we manage on Facebook, Google Plus had an advantage with them, because Google Plus is infinitely more searchable and visible and controllable to various levels of permissions than the Facebook groups are. The problem with Facebook groups are, there's a lot of challenges with permissions, and it's just hard to find these things and hard to participate in them.
And hard to manage, to be honest. It's hard to manage.
You end up with so many different groups for so many subsets of our communities. Because keep in mind, there's 6.2 million Hootsuite users, operating in over 200 countries around the world. And we want to try and take care of all of them and give them a place to hang out and interact with us. But really the thing that put it over the top for us was the integration of the community with the Google Plus Hangouts. And the Google Plus Hangouts have been a huge win for us to outreach to international communities. So like once a month, we'll have a Google Plus Hangout specifically in Portuguese for Brazilian audiences. And this gives us a way to connect with them. We can record that and archive it for later use. But it's all baked in there, where we just have one tool to service that whole thing. We can have a community up and running with our granular level of permissions that we want very, very rapidly, without the onerous permissions issues and management issues of Facebook. Plus, what we found is, because we have so many business users, Facebook tends to be a very personal place to hang out. This is where you hang out with your friends and family and your old flames from high school or whatever. It's not the place where you want to share your professional credentials and your professional opinions so much. So what Google Plus does is a little bit like LinkedIn, where it has that arm's length from your personal life, where this can be more focused on your professional life. And it's a place where you can be social with these people that you interact with on a work basis, whether they be from other companies or other, constituencies that you might, they might interact with. So it's really the Google Plus Hangouts and the ease of building a community that really made it happen for us. I will point out that when we first launched Google Plus Pages integration, we were given an extremely limited amount of seats, meaning we could only give licenses to a few big customers. It's kind of a trial basis. And Google Plus at first for us turned into a channel for people to complain that they couldn't get Google Plus in Hootsuite. So it became a little bit meta for us. So it was a little bit of a negative start for us. But the day that Google Plus opened that up and allowed us to add more of them, there was 5 digits worth of signups that happened in that first 24-hour span, where a lot of people quickly added their Google Plus pages. But now they complain about that we don't have Google Plus profiles. Mm. But we can only do things that Google allows us to do, and we're certainly watching that, and we pass that feedback along to our partners there at Google.
I think it's a really good point you make about Google Plus Hangouts, because that to me is the essence of that. That's the most intriguing part of the entire platform. So, I'll try not to criticize it as much as we move ahead. Now, let's talk a little bit about social media overall. I think we're in North America. We are under the misunderstanding that we have a very worldly view because we use Twitter and Hootsuite and LinkedIn, and because we're on all these social networks, that we have a real feel for the pulse of the world through social media. But the social media channels that we use, they're just the tip of the iceberg. You guys are engaging in ones that are in Europe and in Asia that we as North Americans really have no idea that are going on, but they're still very vital.
And they're very big.
Yeah.
So a couple of them that come to mind right away is, and I'll start with another Google property called Orkut. They call it Orkut in Brazil. And there's two countries where this network, Orkut, is huge, and it's Brazil and India. 34 million uniques a month in Brazil. And what this tells me, and it's been around a long time, so a lot of these early adopters, dudes like you in Brazil, there must be a Steve Dotto in Brazil just like you, and they have all this content on Orkut. And so when we added an Orkut integration, it was a low barrier to entry for us, and a low risk move, but we wanted to tip our hat to the Brazilian social media users and say, hey, we realize a lot of you folks still have a presence on Orkut. You want to manage it, but it's not maybe your primary thing anymore. We're going to give you Twitter and Facebook and all these other tools, but hey, here's also our Orkut for you. Now we've done the same thing with Japan with a network called Mixi, M-I-X-I, and we've built an integration to that. And recently in China, we released two Chinese versions, simplified and traditional, which is a little bit of this is a whole other episode to talk about it, China specifically.
Yeah.
But now we've added Sina Weibo. And Weibo just roughly translates to microblogging. So there's a lot of services called Weibo. Sometimes they all get thrown into the same bucket. But there's Sina Weibo and Tencent Weibo. And we have integrations with both of them now, along with RenRen. And these are three social networks that are all the same size, you know, roughly the same size as Twitter. And they're
really
voracious. Oh, they're all huge. Right. And the voracious appetite, and the people are online all the time contributing to these things. And we were actually proud to be the first English integration that we came across anyway for Sina Weibo. And a few months later, Sina Weibo announced their own English kind of version of their own tool. We see it as a tool for Western brands to start to get access to Chinese markets and vice versa. It's not going to replace those tools, but it adds another way to monitor and stay on top of those conversations. Now, in Europe, there's a German LinkedIn-type tool called Xing with an X. We added it. Great. The people love it. In France, one called Video. And in Russia, there's a huge social network called VKontakte, pardon my pronunciation. They just call it VK. And don't tell anyone yet, but we have an integration coming out on this with this very soon. And this is another huge – it's the biggest social network in Russia.
What a slap in the face. So you're on my radio show and you say don't tell anybody because you know what our listenership is. Oh, my God. So anyways, go on.
Well, the thing is, to your audience, there's going to be probably three people in your audience that are using VK, because I don't know if you're big in Russia yet.
No, not yet. Soon, though, yes. We're working on it.
So a lot of the reasons why we do these international tools are to kind of show a sign of respect to these countries as we release a translated version, localized content, and a network integration. And this shows that, hey, we're paying attention to what your needs are what can we do for you next? And it's a way to kind of start the conversation rather than saying, hey, we're really into Twitter and Facebook here in U.S. and Canada, so you better use those as well. That's not the approach we want to take.
But it is a bit sobering when we think about what that we're looking at the tip of the iceberg on social media that we think is the iceberg when we're looking at Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn here in North America. And it is really just the tip of the iceberg because there are so many other vital platforms. And it also is probably sobering with the fact that these three big players, they can't become overconfident that they're going to be there no matter what.
Well, I don't dare to wade into that, but this is a dynamic landscape. And it doesn't take a lot of flashing back to remember when you could actually shingle your entire house with AOL CDs.
Yes.
And AOL ruled the world. And remember when Yahoo ruled the world. And remember when Netscape was the magical cure for cancer. And you know, there's all these different tools that we see come and go. And whether, you know, Friendster, for that matter. And whether MySpace, hello?
Yes.
And whether it becomes, you know, a lack of direction in the company and acquisition that kind of goes sideways. But we're, for whatever reason, we're in a very time-compressed industry, and things can become heroes to zeros very, very rapidly.
Yes.
That said, you know, certainly, you know, I live on the Twitters. Anyone who follows me knows I'm a little bit noisy, and I do a lot of tweeting. And I hang out in these social networks because I love communication. But to me, it's not all that much different than back in the 70s when CB radios ruled the world. And I know no one under 40 knows what a CB radio is. But it was very much like Twitter in the sense that you had this many-to-many communication where you would talk about ephemeral things like what you're having for lunch, but also very personal things that you may not be able to relate with your family or close personal friends. But you can put them out there to the world and share ideas. Now, this was an audio-based tool and a very different technology. But the same way at our heart, we're all, you know, we humans are storytellers and we're sharers for the most part. And we love to share this stuff. So the tools on themselves, I think, will continue to be more and more invisible. And the walls between these social networks will continue to be a little bit fuzzy.
Are you ready for this? XM112054. that was my CB. That was my CB license.
I somehow knew you would get the CB reference.
I did. Well, it's funny how I don't think I've talked about it in eons, and I don't know why my license came to me other than you had to call it each time, or I was afraid the CRTC van would pull up and arrest me because the licensing restrictions were all over the radio at that point. Talk to me about influencers. You, in the notes, when we were chatting back and forth about what we should talk about, you wanted to talk about the power of influencers, and we certainly see now that influence is coming from all sorts of different places, being generated through social media. Talk to me about your thoughts on that.
Well, for me, it's a little bit of I have a tiny bit of cynicism that I'll try to curb while I try to describe this, but because I don't want the social media world to turn into a high school popularity contest. But what I've seen over the last 3 years, as this, you know, as broadcast media sort of declines and this many-to-many conversational media increases, is all of a sudden brands are dying to get the people who have built out networks for themselves. And that are the people who, when I say, oh my goodness, this pair of this branded jeans or this beverage or this kind of beer is the best and you should totally. And, you know, the brands now want to outreach to these people and truly treat these people as the channel that used to be the TV was the thing telling you what was important. Now it's people like you, where if I'm selling a technology widget, well, I can broadcast a tweet out to everyone that says, hey, we have a new widget. Or I can go to a dude like Steve Dotto, who has a network and people respect you and look to you as a technology expert. And I say to you, hey, listen, I have these new widgets. I'd like to send you 20. Why don't we do a contest? Why don't you try this out? Why don't you tell me what you think? Let's build a conversation around this widget. Because you're an influencer, we want your candid opinions. They hope that your opinions will be good, and they have to take some risk with that.
Mm-hmm.
But the importance of influencers was really evident this year at South by Southwest, which we'll dive into, where, you know, the people down at South by are sort of assumed to be influencers, and they're assumed to have a network of people who are paying attention to them. As such, everyone is putting their brand and trying to give you their brand and make you love their brand and make you contribute to their culture. All over the place, where really you can skid around with hardly paying for a car ride or a beverage down there.
Isn't that interesting? I was just reading an article on some of the clout uses. Clout is a measurement of how influential you are theoretically online. And some companies are actually creating sales structure, which tiers how much you pay for an item is based on your clout score. And if you have a high enough clout score, you can actually pay nothing for an item. They'll give it to you if you rate high enough, which is bizarre. Yeah.
And so, you know, as the clout score increases, when you log in there and integrate and add all your accounts, you'll be presented with clout perks.
Yes.
And companies go to clout and pay a significant sum of money to then give away perks, free stuff, to people who attain this clout score. Now, of course, it becomes kind of like with, Google search rankings, where people kind of game the system a little bit.
Yep.
And you can't take it all at face value. You have to dig in there a little bit.
Yeah.
But it's pretty remarkable to see that if you built out a network channel and a sphere of influence, there's all kinds of things you can get for free. Can you build a job out of that? Well, certainly some people do, but for most times, people have a day job. They're doing this for fun, and oh, great, I can try out this new product. I can be a new test case. I can be a new focus group for all these kinds of things, depending on my clout score. But again, I think that people shouldn't limit their participation in social network because they don't have a big-time clout score. That's not the goal. The goal is to share interesting things about yourself and dive into conversations about the things you care about. But if you can get some free treats out of it too, hey, knock yourself out.
You said you wanted to try and keep your cynicism out, and with South by Southwest, that might have been difficult. But do you think that this idea of social media influences maybe jumped the shark? Do you think that maybe that it might have reached its zenith at this particular South by Southwest, or is it just going to continue on?
We've hardly seen the beginning of it.
Oh, no.
What's going to happen, I think, is as more and more, dare I say, normals, people who haven't been geeking out for decades like you, and people who don't work in the industry like me, as more and more normals start using these tools, more and more people will start to become influencers for laundry detergent and things that aren't cool products per se. You know, who's the influencers for what kind of diapers you should buy? Well, certainly there's a whole cult of mommy bloggers over there. They're suddenly getting this influence and getting free diapers to try out because they've built out these networks. But we've only seen the beginning of all these social network tools. I mean, in my realm of people that I interact with, yeah, sure, everyone's got a Facebook page, but there's a little bit of, oh, geez, I'm kind of sick of that. So many people still on Twitter aren't really using it for the intended purposes. We're only at the beginning of this stuff. And as broadcast advertising and print advertising spends decline, more social campaigns and more influencer outreach and community building is absolutely going to increase, I think.
I would tend to agree with you. I was just hoping that maybe some sanity was going to step in, but that sounds like it's not going to. Now, let's return to South by Southwest for a moment, because certainly it's a fascinating conference. And John Beeler, you mentioned in your notes to me something that John said was that this was a return to hardware. It was like going back into the days of Comdex.
Yeah, you know, this was a South by Southwest custom made for John Beeler. And John's got I think this was year 8 for him, 7 for me. And so he was kind of been at all these South Bys, and we've had a ton of adventures. And, you know, after a few years, you start to go, geez, am I really getting something new out of this? And is there really something here? And it kind of turned into this, who's winning the South By? What software company? Who's the new Twitter? And I got so sick of all the media talking about who's the next Twitter? Who's the next thing? Who's the next Foursquare? No. It's really about celebrating our culture and celebrating ideas and jumping into conversations and realizing these people aren't Twitter avatars, but they have arms and legs and everything in real life. But this was custom made for John Beeler in the sense that, you know, John's a huge 3D printing geek.
Yes.
And an innovator and a pioneer in this world. He's been down here to the office and brought us all kinds of treats. And he gave a talk this year about how 3D printing changed his life. And there was a lot of stuff, a lot of buzz about Google goggles, a lot about maker culture. Bree Pettis from MakerBot was one of the keynotes. And, you know, Amber Case, last year, the cyborg anthropologist, talked a lot about how these hardware devices impact our lives and how this is a good thing. It's not cyborgs like we're all RoboCop. It's now we have these little robots in our pocket that can do all kinds of things that we're just tapping the technology for. So there was a lot of talk, still, as there always is, about new software products. But really, there was a lot of talk about how easy it is to make new hardware devices and how the parts are cheap. You know, another example was Elon Musk, who does the Tesla and also basically making DIY parts to send rockets to Mars. And, you know, it's like, well, we don't have to have the military-industrial complex to send things into space now. We can actually build it in a garage and make it all happen. And these things that seemed like science fiction just a few years ago are it's pretty remarkable how quickly and how differently these things are adapting to really household hobbyist use.
John really parroted exactly what you were saying. Dave, we've believe it or not, run out of time. Now, if I know that you're a real big, you like the socialization as much as the social media. So on the 17th of this month, we're having our first ever Dottotech Beer and Wings Night down at Hudson's Landing Pub. Would love it if you poke on in.
Yeah, and you know, for some reason, if I can make it, because keep in mind, I live up in Upper Lynn Valley, so I spend half my life on the bus.
Okay.
But if I can't make it, we will absolutely send you down a care package of treats that you can either distribute to the attendees or give to someone as a prize. I'm not going to give you a lot of dogma about how to run your tweet up, but you know, every year at South by, I always kind of take on the unofficial goal of winning the Swag Olympics.
Yeah.
I call it, and having the best swag down there. And I think we were pretty much the clear winners. I got to say, it made me really proud to be a Canadian down there, because for 30 million people, we're boxing way above our weight class, and we have a huge impact in this industry.
We do.
But one way or another, we'll make sure that there's a care package of Hootsuite swag down there.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
Share with your listeners.
I haven't even thought about that part of it yet, so you've opened my eyes, because I don't know anything about running one of these events other than I've put it up on Eventbrite, and now we've got people registering, so that's a step in the right direction.
Well, if it's any consolation, we've done the same thing, and last year we did 123 hoot-ups in 23 countries with an average cost of about 35 cents per attendee.
Okay.
And one of my favorite things to do is look at all the pictures that come from these different hoot-ups. Everyone wearing their owl masks, they have their Hootsuite beer koozies, and they're all smiling in all these far-flung countries from Indonesia to Istanbul, and they're all thinking about one thing, and that's Hootsuite. So it means I've done my job pretty well. So let's get those people down there talking about the cult of Dotto,
yes,
and it will be a job well done.
I think that's a fine motive for the whole event. If you want to follow Dave, he is Dave O Hoots at Dave O Hoots. To follow him on Twitter, of course, Hootsuite. Hootsuite.com to go download it or log in and set up your account to start using what I think is the finest social media dashboard out there. Dave, thanks for your time, and hopefully we'll see you in a couple weeks. If not, we'll get you back on the show next month sometime.
Hey, fantastic. Let's get the whole, you know, 3-hour marathon segment next time. We got so much to talk about, Steve.
we'll have to talk to the bosses here, but we might.
All right.
Have a good day.
Cheers.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Do you have a comment or question for Dottotech? Visit our website at dottotech.com and click on Contact Us. Dottotech is brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Now, back to Steve.
It has been far too long since our newest guest, or our next guest, has been with us. Did I say that correctly? Michael Kozlowski, he is the editor of Good E-Reader. He is my go-to guy for all things related to e-books and e-book readers. How are you doing, Mike?
Not too bad. I'm sure things are going well with you.
Reasonably well. Now, have you been on the road a lot lately? You're often traveling all over the globe.
Yeah. Last month we were at Seattle, and we were at a library conference. I guess the American Library Association has a few get-togethers every few years, or months rather, and they show off all the new technology, what they're trying to do to make libraries a little bit more digital. So I had a field day with that, and it's kind of funny because when going into it, I had a feeling that everyone would be wearing cat's eye glasses, and you know, it would be like the quintessential librarian. Everyone would be, you know, shushing me and stuff.
Yeah.
But actually, everybody was like under 30 for the most part, young and hip.
So the new librarian is a young and hip person.
Yes. I am definitely a fan of the new school librarian.
There we go. Good stuff. Well, I think that their profession is absolutely having to reinvent itself. And the school librarians are at the forefront of that. For sure.
I think so. And I mean, libraries in general are changing so much, you know, the cost of books versus the cost of digital. It's this huge divide where getting digital content now is just so much more affordable. But schools and libraries are having to sort of adjust to that new frontier. And the big issue is you have like the old guard, which are the older librarians, people, they've been there for decades, they have all the positions of power, and they're really resistive to change and going digital. Then you have young guys and young ladies that are all, we have to move digital, we have to go to ebooks. So there's a lot of butting heads on that front, which is sort of stifling a bit of the innovation in that sector.
All the while the publishers are trying to get their heads around how they're going to make money in this new universe when they're not actually delivering hard copy books and paper.
It's true. And, you know, when it comes to libraries, a lot of companies are very resistive to the idea of putting their books so they could be freely borrowed, because their big argument is by giving it away for free, it devalues ourselves as a publisher, devalues the author, and, you know, devalues everybody in the pipeline. So companies like Penguin Publishing, who are owned by Pearson, I mean, they're one of the top six publishers in the world, and they only just started getting involved in library lending within like the last month or two.
Yeah, they're being basically forced kicking and screaming into the space because they do not want to play, because their value proposition is severely threatened, for sure.
I totally agree.
Yeah. But in that threatening, there is also opportunity for others and for authors to forge their own way and for new business models to grow. So it's not the end of the world for the publishing industry. It's just a correction.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you look at, say, the aforementioned Penguin, they announced that 34% of their entire U.S. revenue comes from ebooks, and a year ago it was below 20. So. They're definitely seeing a lot of movement with ebooks, you know, in Canada and North America. And, you know, the landscape's really changing. And this is a very, very interesting time with newspapers, magazines, and books in general. I mean, all these traditional industries that have been around for hundreds of years are radically transforming right now.
Absolutely. Now, what's up with Amazon and the Goodreads site?
Well, Goodreads has been around since about 2007. And they're the leading sort of book club social site. They have about 16 million members, over 30,000 book clubs, and people have added over 530 million books to their shelves. And one of the big things that this company does is reviews. So with all those members, they're writing reviews of books. And Amazon has purchased this company. And it's an undisclosed sum, but they're going to incorporate the Goodreads social experience into their tablets and their e-readers. So if you're a member of Goodreads and you like sort of belonging to these virtual book clubs, it's good news. The bad news is that Sony and Kobo, all of their reviews for all of their books in their bookstores, pull this information from Goodreads. So now that Goodreads is going to be owned by Amazon in a very short amount of time, I'm really not too sure how Kobo and Sony are going to be able to deal with this, because they don't own their reviews. They pull their reviews from, you know, the Goodreads API.
Oh, so they use that as a source for the reviews that they put on their website.
Yes.
And so now with Amazon, they're saying, are we going to pull the content from our competitor, even though it should be arm's length from Amazon, because they're more concerned about people just talking about literature.
But, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's a difficult situation for those two.
Could you imagine if you were Kobo right now and you were just in, you know, using the Goodreads review system for years and years, never bothered taking reviews of your own, and then overnight all your reviews are gone and you're going to have to start from scratch. That's
now, that's will it suck. Be, will this be Amazon's decision, or is it Kobo's decision not to use the reviews?
Well, I think it's both. I mean, it's in this transitionary period of time where Amazon doesn't officially own Goodreads yet. I think the paperwork signed, the lawyers have signed off of it. I think they officially own it, I think, in June. So, and of course, there's going to be a period of time in which, you know, everything's you know, adjusted and they're checking everything out. But I think by the end of the year, you're going to see Kobo and Sony hurting really bad, because they won't be able to use the Goodreads review system anymore. Or if they do, it's going to be promoting Amazon in some form or another.
Yeah, I use Goodreads. I quite like it. It's obviously the 800-pound gorilla. It's the one that's certainly the dominant player in the book review space.
And yeah, I mean, from a social experience, you know, the one thing about ebooks in general is that it's a solitary experience, and there's few avenues in order to make digital content social. And I think Goodreads did very well at establishing sort of a digital book review, a digital sort of ecosystem that was agnostic. You know, whether you had a Nook, a Sony, a Kobo, or whatever, you can belong to this site. But now it's owned by Amazon. It's no longer agnostic, and it's more, this is Amazon branded.
And there's more news from Amazon, the book giant. Now, what's this about they're developing some new form of technology that they've patented?
Now, this is a very exciting story. And what basically Jeff Bezos, he's like the CEO of Amazon, and he just patented a new way for screens to handle without any batteries, without any internal processors. I mean, if you have an iPad, it can only get so thin, and yeah, it can only get so light. And I mean, it's the same with you know, any type of tablet, any type of e-reader, and the cost could only be, you know, lowered so much by the time the company is losing money. And so when it comes to consumers, students, and you know, just everyday people, it's hard to spend that $600-$700 on a tablet. And so the future of the Kindle, in the way that the CEO and all the forward thinkers of the company are going, is you just basically pay for like a slave. So you're paying for just a display screen, whether it's flexible or whether it's not. That factor is indeterminate. But what they're saying is you'll have a screen, and the screen will be controlled by the base station. And the base station is what powers your e-reader or powers your tablet, the processors, the RAM, you know, all the internals. So suddenly you're carrying around basically just a screen, and all the internals are in a base station. And they're basically saying that this is going to be perfect for schools where the screen's dead until you come into a certain proximity of these base stations. All of your textbooks would be there, the internet experience, full color. It would be the tablet experience as you know it now, except you would just basically be carrying around a screen, almost like Star Trek style.
And it's really kind of a client-server relationship, it sounds like. It sounds like you've got a thin client, a limited... it's basically just got communication, not actual processing power in the screen that you're carrying around, and all of the processing is done in the server.
Yeah, exactly. So it's almost like when people have PCs and, you know, you swap video cards every now and again, or you might put in a new processor or more RAM. So I would say that these base stations are upgradable. And so, you know, living in a house where everyone's just connected and tech savvy, imagine just buying the screen and all the screens in your household are just controlled by this little base station.
That's an interesting concept. I question how it can be patentable since we've had it for a long time, but they can certainly figure out ways to do that. We just have a few minutes left. Fill me in on what's happening with Kobo these days.
Okay, well, Kobo just announced that they're finally taking orders for their entire line of e-readers and tablets on their website. In the past, you had to walk into a Future Shop, a Best Buy, or a myriad of other sort of brick-and-mortar stores to buy one. Now, the problem is small-town Canadians maybe don't have a Best Buy. You know, they have to maybe drive a few hundred miles or a Walmart or something like that. So Kobo is now taking orders for all their e-readers and tablets on their website, and they will deliver it to you within just a few days. So if you do live in small towns, if you live out of the way, or if you just hate going out in public, a tech shut-in, if you will, you can just order it online and they'll ship it directly to you.
Have things been pretty... I lied. I have one more question. Have things been pretty quiet on the ebook reader front? Like, if... Because people still ask me, what should I buy? And I don't know anymore because I haven't had you on the show for 6 months. What's the best value in ebook reader today?
I would probably say the Kindle Paperwhite is very solid, and Amazon actually just opened it up about a month and a half ago to Canadians. So you can go to Amazon.ca and actually buy a Paperwhite. That's probably one of my favorite e-readers. It allows you to read in the dark.
Okay. It's called the Paperwhite, so it's a backlit screen.
It's a front-lit screen. So instead of the light coming from behind the screen, it's built into the bezel, and it's splashed on top of the screen. So you don't have, like, the tablet, like the iPad, where the light's emitting in your eyes.
Yeah.
The screen is evenly distributed with the light. So you could read it in any environment, any circumstance.
So it still works in the glare of outside because it's got the normal, but it's just got this lighting in the bezel in case you're in the dark environment.
Exactly, and it's all touchscreen controlled, so you could shut it off. You could tweak it depending on if you're in the shade on a sunny day and you're just reading under a tree. If your wife's trying to go to bed at night, but you still want to read instead of having a lamp on, which you needed in the past with an e-reader, you could just, like, you know, illuminate the screen to whatever setting that you feel comfortable in.
And it's a touchscreen?
Yes, it is.
And it starts at about $120.
Yeah, you're looking at, you can get the 3G model or just the Wi-Fi model. And the thing with Amazon is that they give you an option to pay less on the hardware in order to serve you ads. They're called the Special Offers Edition. So if you don't mind ads on the home screen or on when the screen's on the standby, you can save about $30 and go that route.
But, oh, I see. Yeah. So here it is. With special offers, it's $120. Without special offers, it's $140. Why would you not take the special offers? Advertising is just fine. It keeps people like you and me in business.
Yeah, I mean, it comes down to some people are just, like, really resistive to advertising, and they don't want to be bothered by it. But the one thing that Amazon's quietly done over the years is that, say, Steve, you give me a special offer, and I'm, you know, I'm kind of like, these ads are a bit intrusive. I can actually pay Amazon $25, and they'll remove the ads from my e-reader remotely.
There we go. Mike Kozlowski is the editor at Good E-Reader. It is our source for all things ebook related at goodereader.com. Mike, thanks so much for spending time with me today. And in 2 weeks, come on down to the big Dotto Tech beer and wing night.
I will, and I'll relish hanging around with all the local Vancouver tech geeks.
Yeah, nerds. You got it. Have a good one, Mike.
Thanks, Steve. Bye.
Dotto Tech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Do you have a comment or a question for Dotto Tech? Visit our website at dottotech.com and click on Contact Us. Dotto Tech is brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Now, back to Steve.
And Julian Saunders joins us now from Saskatchewan. How are you doing this week, Julian?
I'm doing great. How are you doing, Steve?
I'm doing just fine. I'm glad the topic that you want to talk to me about. You want to talk to me about the best 10 accessories for smartphones and tablets, right?
You got it.
Because I am unhappy with my only two accessories that I use on an ongoing basis.
What are those?
Those are my case. I've got a case for my iPhone 4S, which is the OtterBox. But I've got the OtterBox Defender, like the uber one that makes it basically cockroach-like as far as its ability to survive nuclear destruction. And I've also got Apple's flip cover on my iPad. And I'm not overly enamored with either one. And maybe I should be, but I'm not. First of all, the Defender case does protect the heck out of the iPhone. I can't imagine being better protected. But the rubber on it is getting saggy. It's stretching out.
I had the same experience. My wife had the same OtterBox you did. We had to replace it under warranty, even.
Yeah, it's all kind of old and saggy, and I'm not happy with it. Every time I pick up my phone, I feel like I'm picking up something that's slowly kind of just, I don't know how to put it, and it's kind of gross but saggy. And my the Apple's flip cover for the iPad, it's my second one. They start to tear along the seam because I always use it as a handle to a certain extent, and so it's not standing up and it's starting to break down. And I guess I've had it for nearly a year, I guess, so it's not all that bad. But I'm not in love with it. I got to find a better cover. So I'm hoping you're going to cover the best cases for these things.
For sure, yeah.
So what are the 10 must have. Things for my tablets and phones?
Well, I'll start off with the indestructible case. As spring's here and as summer hits, a lot of people go out in and about into the wild. And if you've got your iPad or iPhone, the Griffin Survivor is an amazing case. It's a competitor to the OtterBox. I personally prefer it for a couple of reasons. It has rubberized covers over all of the ports.
Mm-hmm.
So the camera is covered, which is a big one because the OtterBox, depending on the model that you have, doesn't have a cover there. And the bottom where the dock connector goes is also covered. Even the headphone jack has a little rubber cover.
Yeah.
And they were very careful when you – I use my phone and iPad a lot for camera for the camera, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's a little flap that you pull, and then it stays parked down. So you can leave it open, and you don't have to hold it open. It stays open on its own until you're ready to close it up. So those are – they're great for drops. They've got a plastic skeleton on the inside and then a rubberized outside.
So the very similar to the to what we've got with the OtterBox, but just they're not going to sag.
No. They the way that they're like when you put it on, it kind of reaches around it, kind of like you grab your fingers and hold on to something real tight.
Yeah.
So it's made in a different way. It's not like the OtterBox that you kind of put it on the side and it's held together by little tiny posts and stuff. It's very well made.
Yeah. Okay, and it's about the same price, $49. I think the OtterBox is $69, so it's in the same price range.
Right, and it's available for iPhone 4, 4S. iPad mini and iPad.
Okay, I'm going to check that one out. Okay, what's next?
The big one that I always make sure my friends know about, because I've got a lot of friends that love music, is a good Bluetooth speaker. Something that's small and portable, easy to use wherever you are. There's been a lot of people, you know, buying docks over the years. I know personally I have at least four docks here at home. Two of them are actually quite nice. They're a little higher end, but I'm not going to unplug them and take them with me, plug them into an inverter in my car. It becomes a real hassle, and I can't use my music anywhere. So I have a little Bluetooth speaker. It's a little tube. It's about a foot long, and it's only about 3 inches thick, so very, very thin. My pick right now is it's called the Zuka wireless Bluetooth speaker.
Z-U-K-A?
It's like bazooka, but without the B-A.
Oh.
It's Z-O-O-K-A. And it's from a company called Carbon Audio that's actually quite good at making small but powerful speakers.
Mm-hmm.
It has a little bit of bass, so for its size, it doesn't sound tinny or tiny.
Mm-hmm.
It's nice that it has a 4-watt rechargeable, or 4 watts total volume, and it has a battery life of about 6 to 8 hours. I got a whole weekend out of it using it a couple hours a day. So.
And it also acts as a stand. Your iPad can dock right into it type thing.
You got it, yeah. Even a thin phone. I have a couple of friends that have the Note 2, mm-hmm. the big phablet from Samsung, and it docked in there nice too.
Good, okay. The Zuka. Got it.
And speaking of the other speakers, right, you might have a speaker dock that you already mm-hmm. like. Maybe mm-hmm. you have a new device that doesn't use the same connection as your old one. You know, the dock connector from Apple changed to the Lightning. And
yes.
Mini to micro changeout for
people,
the other guys.
Many people unhappy.
So there's a couple of ways to make your dock Bluetooth enabled.
Mm-hmm.
So there's you have to make the assumption that it has a line in, so you have to check your dock to see if there's a place to connect a looks like a little quarter inch headphone jack.
Yep.
And there's a little black box that's made by Allura Tech. It's $49.99, and it just plugs into the headphone jack, and then it picks up Bluetooth from your device.
Okay, so it's basically a Bluetooth amplifier.
Right, and it's a little, it's about the size of a pack of matches, so it's easy to hide it if you want to, if you care about the looks and not having a ton of cords. And it's powered off of its own battery source. You don't have to charge it up that often, so it's not something that you have to worry about there. So if you have a nice dock, like I was mentioning, I have a couple of higher-end ones from a few years ago. The Bluetooth adapter is a perfect solution because then you still get to use the investment you had in the other dock.
They call it the Universal Bluetooth Audio Receiver.
Right, you got it, yeah.
Allura Tech, Allurateck. Awesome.
You got it, yeah.
Okay.
And the other one that I get this question more often, and I might need a grammar expert to say this correctly, but a lot of people ask me what the differences are in the styluses available.
Mm-hmm.
Is that stylus or styli? Anyway, there's a bunch of people want a finer tip stylus.
Yes.
So they want like a hard, they're asking for a hard pen like tablet. But the way that today's touchscreens work is through electromagnetic properties in our body. So that's one of the reasons styluses that you're used to seeing have the big rubber tip. We've got a very good variety of those. They're less expensive to manufacture. Inside of the stylus is a little brass tube that's actually transmitting the signal, the electricity through your body to the device. So it can't just be a tiny little piece of rubber in order to contact with it.
Mm-hmm.
And the way around that is a company called Jot, J-O-T-T, has had a stylus out for a while that has a clear plastic disc on the end.
Yes.
And there's a little thing to make it work, a little bit of metal inside of the plastic disc, so then you can see what you're doing. Have you seen one of those?
Yes, the Jot. And it kind of looks like a miniature version of that old child's game where you have the frisbee that you're a plate that you're balancing on the end of a stick.
Yeah, you got it, yeah.
So that's it. So that's the Jot. You know what, Julian, you got five more for me, right?
You got it, yep.
You know what we're going to do is we're going to break now because I'm going to get you to give me the rest, and we're going to air them next week because this is taking a little longer than I anticipated. How does that sound?
Sounds good to me.
So, Julian, thanks so much. All of these five will be posted on our website. That's Julian Saunders from London Drugs. Well, Art, that is all the time. Did we have a spectacular lineup of intelligent guests today or what?
Yeah, absolutely. I learned a lot about more about ebooks and Hootsuite.
I could listen to Dave Olson talk all day. He's an intelligent, articulate guy. And
I think he would love for you to listen to
a storyteller.
To
him. He does go on, but that, as a radio host, I love that. Come to the website, sign up to win Office 365. Come to the website, sign up to come to the Dottotech Beer and Wine Night. Beer and Wing Night.
Oh, it could be beer.
It could
and
be
wine.
Yeah, absolutely. Wing Night on the 17th of this month, 7 o'clock. Oh, we will be there, and we hope to see you there, too. But before that, we hope to see you here next week for more Dottotech.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.